Hello everyone, welcome to the QSIA series of podcasts, and today's guest is joining us from Canberra, I'm assuming, yes?
Mackay, actually.
Mackay, okay, so
I got a reprieve.
A bit of background for those listening to the podcast guest today. He is the member for Dawson, and he's also the chair of the Joint Standing Committee on Trade and Investment Growth. Can I welcome to the podcast George Christensen? How are you, mate?
Very good, Eric. And yourself?
Mate, I'm okay, given what's happening with coronavirus and industry in Queensland in general.
Quite concerning.
Yes, it is. So let me start off at the start, I guess, by asking you, what's your knowledge of the issues from facing commercial fishers in Queensland, and what do you think are the core issues that we need to be dealing with in the lead up to our state election, which is still set for October this year, mate?
The reality is that the industry's got more issues than Israel at the moment. From obviously the ongoing attack on the sector from the state Labor government, particularly through its sustainability reforms. I mean, we've had all of the other gumph in the past, the monitoring equipment. Obviously, the Wuhan coronavirus is had a very negative impact. We've seen that on some of the live fish exports and also the crayfish and lobster sectors. So it's just been ongoing issues for the sector. And I think that right now the best thing that government can do at all levels is, one, get off the back of the sector with all of these onerous restrictions and regulations that we're putting in place. I haven't even gotten on to AMPSA yet, which is another bugbear I know of the sector, but offer a helping hand at this point when the industry's in need.
That being the context that we're setting for what's happening with the industry at the moment, we've got a state election happening fairly soon. So I guess from a agriculture fisheries policy position in general, where do you see the policy landscape in Queensland at the moment when it comes to ag and fishing, and what needs to change, if anything?
Well, obviously, the Palaszczuk government has nailed its colours to the mast. I mean, it wants to see this so-called sustainability reform put in place, which quite frankly is not about sustainability at all. It's about it's about a kind of sustainability, the sustainability of continuing to get green preferences in the cities. And I guess the sustainability of trying to get the real sort of hardcore anti-commercial fishing vote that's out there amongst a very, very small section of the recreational fishermen. And that's what this is about. It's not based on science. You know, it is going to make the livelihoods of so many commercial fishermen and their employees and contractors unsustainable. And what I hope is that for the commercial fishing sector and its employees and all of those in the supply chain have a clear choice this election, and it looks like that might be the case. We've got a choice to either back in a government that's going to continue to try and cut the industry's throat, or to support the Liberal National Party, which right now is opposing these sort of measures and is saying that these measures aren't going to be sustainable for the sector. So I would only encourage them more. I have been encouraging them, and hopefully that's where the lay of the land is going to be. But if we see the Palaszczuk government re-elected, then I can do a lot of shouting. You can do a lot of shouting, Eric, from the QSIA's point of view. Your constituent members, all the businesses out there can do a lot of shouting, but ultimately they will have the whip hand and they will use it.
Yeah, that's probably an outcome that industry doesn't want to see. That we have tried for, so just going back for those listening to the podcast, from the very start, industry wasn't opposed to having the conversation around what reform might look like in this state. However, we were hamstrung from the start with what we think was a predetermined set of outcomes for
absolutely
fisheries reform. We've gone out very publicly and had those discussions, and actually put out the request for anyone from government to debate us around these issues, and no one really stepped up to the mark. So we kind of understand where fisheries is going here under the present set of management arrangements. Look, one thing
to that end, could I jump in there, Eric, and just say that I know people who are appointed to working groups and committees that were formed to look into these sustainability or so-called sustainability reforms. We shouldn't really call them sustainability reforms. As I said, they're quite economically unsustainable, but I know people are appointed to these working groups who, you know, were trying to champion the concerns of the sector. And one person in particular quit the working group he was on because exactly that. He just said it didn't matter what I was saying, what concerns he was bringing to the table. There was a predetermined view, and that view was just being railroaded through these working groups. That's not true consultation. That's just simply going through the motions to get an end result that you've always planned on getting.
Yeah, we did a few sums just on what if you put out the time at these commercial fishers and just them on those working groups, what it has cost industry to provide their time for committees that were never going to do anything but act as almost like a tick and flick.
Rubber stamp.
Deal. About 180 grand's worth of industry time that's never going to be recovered. And we always get the mantra from state government, well, you need to be at these things to help industry. Well, it would have been nice if the outcomes of those meetings were actually reported in a way that reflected the meetings. Because one of the things that we found was we got vetted communiques, which were a summary that were that had to be okayed by the government before they went out into the public. So industry never really got a sense of the discussions and arguments that were had in those groups. And given that they're providing advice to government, you would have thought there would have been more transparency there. How do we get better transparency out of these processes when industry is at the start going in with a good deal of good faith, and to end up where we've ended up now, where we're 3 years into a reform and we don't know where the hell it's going?
You know, it's less about they want you at the table. They want the industry at the table. But for what purpose? Is it so that you can have a say, or is it so that they can say, oh, no, we've consulted the industry? To go back to what I said before, that process, as it has been described to me, has not been true consultation. True consultation is saying, look, you know, we've got concerns from one sector of the community. We understand your concerns. We're going to sit down and we're going to talk about it without having a predetermined outcome in mind. And, you know, in that sort of scenario, there's a set of give and takes. There's actual true negotiation that goes on. But as far as I'm seeing it, it's just simply they're telling you to give and give and give, and they're taking and taking and taking. And, you know, the reality is and it doesn't matter all the different parameters that have caused this, but I have heard from crabbers who have got no quota. I have heard from fishermen who've had quota cut in half. I've had fishermen who have had quota cut by 70%, 75%. Go back to the crabbers again. I've had other crabbers that have had their income reduced to just 30%. Now, you could go and argue along with all of the reasons why that's happened, all of the technical detail, and, oh, you know, that they mustn't have been doing this or they mustn't have been doing that. But the point that you've got to start at from true consultation is, what is the purpose of what we are trying to achieve? And so I go back to that word, sustainability, that they're throwing around. Really, so the question now needs to be asked, are there stocks in Queensland that are unsustainable? And if so, where is the proof of that? You know, and the fisheries, RDC, they do not show that there are significant stocks in Queensland that are unsustainable. You know, as many crabs have pointed out to me, you look at the crab stocks, I mean, we've got half the crab population, jennies, that are unable to be taken anyway. Then you go and have a look at the bucks that you can actually get and the size restrictions on it. So that's probably a further reduction by half again. So you're left with 75% of crab stocks almost that are out and about there and roaming free and unable to be taken. So again, what is a sustainability issue? It has not been explained from the get-go. And if you can't explain that, then you have no point in going any further, because there is no problem to be solved. Unless, of course, your problem is that you have a hardcore element, a very small section of the recreational fishing lobby combined with the green movement that's looking at scoring some sort of Pyrrhic, or not Pyrrhic victory, some sort of annihilation victory over commercial fishermen. And you know, if that's the intent, then no level of conversation or consultation is going to stop the end outcomes. It's all about politics and votes.
Yeah, that's there's a lot of truth in that, George. One of the things that we fought against from the very start, when the 60% biomass figure was put out to the public. Now, for those listening, that's how much of the virgin stock do you protect? And world standards, international world standards, is somewhere between 20 and 40%, and 40% is considered ultra conservative in terms of that number. We're trying to hit 60% in Queensland, and when we ask the question of the department, where's the science to back this up? We still haven't had a response, because there is no science. And this was a number we understand that was generated by the conservation group. So it smacks of fisheries policy by ideology, not fisheries policy by good science. And that there's always a double-edged sword with science. If it comes back and said the stocks are in trouble in whatever fishery you're talking about anywhere in the world, you've got to take measures to protect those stocks. But we have very good stocks that are nowhere near the catastrophic tipping point that our Minister for Fisheries has put his reform on. He's basically said, we've got all of our fisheries are in trouble. We need this reform. It's not true. The evidence doesn't support that. And what we have seen is just a lot of smokes and mirrors on this process. So we're hoping for this, from an industry's perspective, I can say this with some confidence, of a change in government, a change in leadership when it comes to agriculture and fisheries policy. And we hope that October brings that about, some sensible policy making for this industry, because people want to be able to get fresh local seafood. And if we keep going the way that we're going with current policy settings, that's going to be a thing of the past, I think, George.
You've hit the nail on the head. It's going to mean either less local caught seafood, or and obviously more imports, or it's going to mean more expensive local caught seafood. And either way, that's not helping the vast majority of the public that don't go fishing themselves and don't have time to go fishing. And quite frankly, can I just touch on that? Because I've talked about recreational fishers a number of times here. I've been very specific in what I said. The vast majority of recreational fishermen, they might get ticked off if they see a professional fisherman near where they're trying to catch, but most of them will just move on to somewhere else. The reality is that most of the recreational fishing sector, if you want to call them that, you know, it's a pastime, it's a hobby, they enjoy, and they don't have an issue with commercial fishermen. They don't support these changes. And I think a lot of them probably are looking at what's going to be next. I mean, what's going to be next is going to be them. Because at the point where the commercial fishing sector have finished being whacked all they can, where do the green groups go next? And where they go next is further bag limits for the recreational fishermen. They have licenses, fishing licenses that they'll probably want to introduce, restrict more restrictions in certain areas where there'll be just complete no-take zones. And if you think that this is crazy, I mean, have a look at what the green groups pushed in terms of the marine parks policy. I mean, they wanted them everywhere. And locking out recreational fishers altogether, as well as commercials. So this agenda will go on, and it won't stop at the commercial fishing sector. The challenge will be, do they win here? Do the green groups win here? And if they do win, well, they'll go on. They'll go on and hit the recreationals as well.
Yeah, thank you for bringing up that point, and that's one that I'd like to, being a representative of at least the QSIA, that we've never said, and I don't think any commercial fishing group anywhere has said, that recreational fishing shouldn't take place. Our gripe when it comes to policy making in this state is around a small, like you said, a very small minority of recreational groups, and some of their leaders, I guess, that have called for less commercial availability of seafood, and that's not, you know, and that happens by restricting our access. So yeah, that, you know, it's everyone's right, because it's a shared resource that we get access to our fishing grounds. All we're saying is we need to temper that with a bit of common sense. And so if you look at what's happened with this reform by way of finalising our chat, George, you're correct. We haven't seen sensible goodwill policy making, and that's what we want and we hope for in a change of government come October. So for those listening, this has been Eric Perez, CEO of the Queensland Seafood Industry Association, talking fisheries policy with George Christensen, member for Dawson. Thank you, George.
Thank you very much, Eric.
Appreciate your time, mate. And for those listening, more of these podcasts to come.
Thanks for listening today, and I'll join you all on the next podcast.